Better Listen and the Nalanda Institute present Hardwiring Happiness with Rick Hansen, Part 1.
Well, for myself, just to begin, to feel into this space, right? To feel the merit here and the good intentions and the efforts here, you can really feel it and to honor it. And also to express my gratitude to you, Joe, who reached out to me, good guy, it's a terrorist fist bump, right? But anyway, and brought me here, so he's my benefactor. I'm very grateful to you, and to Nalanda generally, and Tibet House, and the Dharma Stream, of course, that has carried us along. As you know, I'm going to be presenting in just a couple hours a fair amount of material, so I thought I could just, as I said in the beginning, plant a few seeds, and then we could see what interests you. So my own background is I'm a psychologist, and my early training was in developmental psychology, and then my clinical training was in the 0 to 3 period. My dissertation was on 15-month-olds, the thing that parents do, which is to offer alternatives rather than just saying no. Switch and engage. My wife called it bait and switch, but my dissertation title was Gratifying Control, this mixture of regulation while simultaneously not thwarting the child's purposes as best you can, just simply finding a different way to fulfill them. And even there early on, I at that point I'd been exposed to the Dharma probably at least 20 years or so, 15 years worth. I began meditating in 1974, mainly kind of casual Zen practice, and then also I had some exposure to other traditions too. But my interest was all along actually in the socialization of wanting. How do we, if the second and third noble truths are true, if not the fundamental cause of suffering is desire in some fashion, craving, let's say, drivenness, and if the end of suffering comes with the end of that cause, that the end of that tanha, or thirst, in the language of early Buddhism, how then can we grapple with desires and teach our children to grapple with desires? Because kids come out of the box, as we all know, full of desire, and they're supposed to be full of desire for survival purposes. How can we work with desire in a way that honors our biology and our nature as profoundly social animals, while at the same time not tipping into the dark side of the force, right? So you can see even then, when I was over 20 years ago doing my dissertation with 15-month-olds, I was very interested in this fundamental question of how to manage desire and drive states of various kinds in ways that are healthy and wholesome and don't tip us into trouble. And then how can we teach our kids to manage their own desires, right, in good ways? Parenting is easy when parents and kids want the same thing. Issues arise when they want different things. And then what happens in that rubber meets the road moment when those interactions are very charged and they happen quickly? And yet little things that happen, especially if they happen again and again and again, really add up to make significant changes inside the mind and therefore ultimately the brain of the child. And they can also nudge the relationship between the parent and the child down one path or another path. So if you have much background in early childhood development, it's really clear that interactions with caregivers, especially not so much one-off interactions, but the general recurring quality, the emotional tone again and again and again in an interaction. Is it irritable or is it relaxed? The outcomes of interactions, are they generally satisfying from the child's perspective with some occasional frustration, or are they usually frustrating with some occasional satisfaction? You know, the gradual accumulation of these little moments, 15 seconds here, 4 seconds there, 2 minutes there, this is how long an interactive episode usually is, basically. Those little moments really add up. So out of a sense of how those moments add up, I got very interested in how to help parents be very skillful with children. And then that takes you to the recognition that for parents to deliver that kind of high-quality parenting, which for me is a moral duty, that's what we owe our kids. You know, and as a parent of 2 kids, I did not fulfill that standard all the time, for sure. And what began to strike me early on when